look into a different visual attribute than color, mainly translucency and also gloss, because it's kind of difficult to separate these two.
Yeah, different attributes in general.
Yes, and I'm happy to have you back, and we are looking forward.
Okay.
Lecture,
yeah, good morning, everyone. How many of you did you attend my talk at the Cozy Days? So, yeah, some of you may already find some topics familiar, but now, yeah, we will go deeper into the topic today. So, the topic is material appearance, and specifically gloss and translucency. So, here is the content and plan for today. We will start with very brief introduction on what appearances and what basic appearance attributes are, and later I will overview gloss and translucency perception, and finally identify some open questions, challenges, and present a few examples from the ongoing Color Lab research on appearance. So as you already know, I graduated from COSY back in 2017, and then my research has been primarily on material appearance. It's been like my topic of my PhD on the appearance of translucent objects, perception and assessment by human observers, and now I work on that, and we have like two big projects at the Color Lab from the Research Council, which focuses specifically on material appearance. One is MoveUp, and the second one that I think you are already familiar with, the name is Manner, which is kind of one of the biggest things happening at the Color Lab related to appearance. So usually when my colleagues present Color Lab, they highlight these different research areas: cultural heritage, medical imaging, image quality, maybe some watermarking, graphic arts. But I would say that material appearance is getting bigger, and it's a very new problem. Well, the problem is old, but the research on that has started and is growing just recently. So this is getting a bigger thing for the Color Lab as well. The overall research and understanding is still in its infancy, but it's getting more and more attention. So what is the motivation for studying material appearance? Like, what do you think? Why do we care? Especially to understand how we perceive it.
Nowadays, 3D printing has become very appealing to field that people are trying to reproduce organs, trying to reproduce their kind of teeth or something. And like, we're shifting from materials that are very opaque to materials that are like translucent. And then if you want to reproduce that, then you have to understand it.
Okay, that's, yeah, very nice example. I agree with you. Very, very nice example. Any other thoughts?
For example, in the area of augmented reality, you know, Amazon has this, is working on this project where they have this mirror where you can try out outfits. And, you know, from the comfort of your house, you don't have to go to any shopping mall. You can just try out those outfits and just, you know, just get a sense of how it would look like on you. So for that, you know, you have to work on the appearance of the clothes or the outfits.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, two very nice examples, very vivid illustration why we care about appearance. Yeah, thank you very much. Exactly. So we need to understand humanly mechanisms of appearance perception to replicate, to communicate, to make sure that the quality of the appearance is satisfactory in many different fields, like as already mentioned, 3D printing in cultural heritage, graphics, computer vision, and many more. So we want to have a control of copying appearance between the objects, reproducing the appearance or creating it from scratch, to make sure that it looks in a its eventual look is predictable, and also to communicate it properly. So when we describe something, we need a common language to make sure that we mean the same thing. So that's also an important point. So there are two sides of a coin, humans and machines, and it's kind of on both ways. We need to understand how humans perceive appearance to teach it to the machine so that they could also detect this in computer vision. And the other way around, if we know how humans perceive and what affects human perception, then in computer graphics we generate the stimuli in a predictable way. So perception and appearance. So when you hear this word and you don't have any background related to appearance research, it's usually just a very common thing that we like still use every day to describe people or objects around us. Like when you ask the mirror, mirror, who is the most beautiful among us? So that's an appearance usually we think of in daily lives, but it can go like very technical as well, appearance of materials when modeling them. So it's about like any kind of appearance, from metals to wood, plastic, to human skin, as like presented by Ferreste during the training school. So visual perception is the ability to interpret the information that is embedded in the electromagnetic radiation that is detectable and perceivable by human vision. And on the other hand, appearance is like the attributes we assign to objects based on this information, such as size, shape, color, glossiness, texture, and so on. And we are very good at detecting and perceiving appearance. Like if I tell you, I'm sure it will be very easy to tell which one is fragile, which one you expect to be soft, what materials they are made of, like which one is metal, glass, and plastic. And we do this like almost instantly, so even without thinking on that. We still don't exactly know what is exact calculations and mechanisms in our visual system and brain for this very interesting and powerful ability. And imagine for the computer that just sees the pixel values and the numbers, how complicated this one can get. So how do we understand materials and their properties just from this visual stimulus? Well, if we're if you're lucky enough and have enough like talent, sometimes it works the other way around too. We can generate a good, convincing, realistic appearance from scratch by following some rules that like the artist know somehow, subconsciously know how to make something appear glossy or translucent without explicitly thinking about visual science or scientific perspective. So there has been a hypothesis that our visual system may be inverting the optical processes in the scene, that like in the some of the computer graphics algorithms where you start from the detector and you follow the ray and trace it all the way to the source. So there was a hypothesis that we somehow run this reverse calculations to understand how light interacts with the matter and what is the physical properties of the materials. But it's mostly rejected these days because there is simply not enough information for this. This is an ill-posed problem to really understand all the processes. It's so complicated and too much calculations. And there have been very nice illustrations, for instance, how to trick our vision. Or like in this paper, the author highlights that if we are not told explicitly, there are physically inaccurate things happening in the scene that we might not even detect, like some shadows are missing and so on. So the thing is that even like, for instance, here, we may look that, okay, this is realistic grape and this, and this water, even though it's just paint on a canvas, so we don't really reverse the process of light going through the actual grape, but we still perceive it as realistic. So it means that we may rely on some regularities and statistics in the image to understand the appearance attributes like glossiness or translucency. Here are a few tricky examples that our vision is still not perfect, and it may be misleading in some scenarios. So how many of you have thought, like, before reading the text that this was chicken? Yeah, here is another example that was captured by Peter, and thank you, Peter, again for sharing this one. Yeah, he told me that he was walking in a park in Oslo and thought that the sculpture was covered with a black, like, plastic bag or this kind of material, but actually it's metal. It's not a plastic bag. If you have a closer look, it's metal.
Yeah.
And as you may remember from my presentation at the Cozy Days, color, even though like color science and has big history and is crucial in many applications, color alone is not really enough to fully convey the appearance and fully describe how the objects and materials look. Like, if I tell you to describe these ones, just saying that they are yellow or orange does not really tell the full story, right? There, because some of them, like one of them, is kind of opaque, one is more transparent, another one is more translucent. There is different degree of glossiness. So all these attributes matter in the end how the object or the material looks. And yeah, there are different instruments to measure appearance, like colorimeters or gloss meters, mostly doing the physical optical measurements, how light gets reflected from the surface. But the problem is that these optical physical measures are not really good predictors of human perception. So by having a gloss meter readings, it's not really straightforward to predict how glossy it would appear to humans, because there are so many other things that matter and affect appearance. And our perception, visual perception of appearance, is complicated enough to be captured by a single measurement of an instrument. And there have been very interesting cases circulating around that tell us that there is a lot of mystery happening related to human vision. So I'm sure you all have seen this even before applying to COSI. So how many of you think it's white and gold, and how many blue and black? Yeah.
The whole thing, not the whole thing, but the lace is black.
White gold.
Karen, what's the actual color? Is it actually white gold, or is it actually blue and black? I don't know.
It's blue and black.
Yes.
Yeah.
What about this one? Is it pink and white or cyan and gray?
Cyan and gray.
So there is more consensus on this one.
Pink and white.
Pink Okay, so we have then different ways to measure appearance, so-called hard metrology, the instrumental measurement, and soft metrology, measuring based on human responses, so based on what humans say or like respond or do the tasks in the appearance research. And there are like four basic key optical properties and related attributes that have a big impact on appearance. So these are color, gloss, texture, and translucency. And today I will talk mostly about translucency and gloss. So how do we study or research a material appearance or visual appearance? One very powerful technique is psychophysics that helps us to find the links between the visual stimuli, the physical stimuli, and some properties of the stimuli and human perception, or human perception not on the like sensory level or like neuroscience, but like based on, in simple terms, on what they say or how they express this in different tasks. So we can have the stimuli generated, for example, in computer graphics. We may use RGB photographs or like even physical objects to play with, where each of them comes with its own pros and cons. Like computer graphics is very convenient for like tweaking the material properties and rendering the new stimuli with new properties and seeing, for example, if you have everything fixed and then change just one property and then see how this affects appearance to understand what matters for this particular appearance and how particular property affects the visual look of objects, then graphics is very useful in this case. But on the other hand, sometimes they are not realistic, and seeing the having the displays where like that show this image are far from our daily experience. While physical objects, for example, make more like genuine experience. For instance, when I want to assess glossiness, I may move the object or move my head in real life. And that's the physical objects are closer to real life situations, while when something is displayed on the computer screen, you can't really move your head to see how the appearance changes. But on the other hand, of course, physical objects are very expensive to manufacture and prone to artifacts and damage and aging and so on. And then in psychophysics, you may have like different kinds of tasks. I think you are going through like some of the basic psychophysics this year in image quality. Do you have image quality course? Not yet.
We just have a glint from Marius. But the students have the freedom to dig into that based on their interest. But otherwise, there is no specific course.
Okay. But yeah, there are many different ways you can design the psychophysical experiment, design the task. For instance, it can be that you have three stimuli and you ask the observer, the one in the center is a reference, and tell me which one is closer to it. Is this one closer to it in appearance or in glossiness, if you're studying glossiness, for example, or is this one closer to this? Or you may have pair comparison. You may show like, okay, two stimuli and tell me which one appears more translucent or more glossy or more opaque. And then by having all these different combinations of stimuli, you analyze the statistics and try to identify how the properties of the object relate to how they are perceived. So today I will skip color and texture because they are very broad topics in themselves and deserve a full-scale lecture, and mostly focus on gloss and translucency, as already said. But in some sense, we may look at gloss and translucency as well as a kind of texture problems, and all texture, gloss, and translucency in the end are specially varying color and properties. So you may have color of a point. It may be red or green, but gloss, translucency, and texture usually imply some special information, some variation of color in space. You can have just like single point and say, okay, this is glossy or translucent. For instance, what we mean by texture is that we somehow understand that this color variation of these squares comes from the reflectance properties of the material. So it's painted this way, and this is painted yellow, and this is painted greenish, and this is painted like light red, and so on. While we also somehow understand that this most likely is not the paint or property of the object itself, like the something that is the surface color, but just a reflection of the illumination. And this is a better example of gloss, where we understand that this variation, this image is reflected from the environment. The object just reflects the environment, and that's why we have this variation, and it's not just painted on top of it. And the same for translucency. We understand that this gradient here is not just how the candle is colored, but it's the light penetrating the material, going through it, scattering inside, and coming on the other side. We understand that there is some subsurface light transport inside. Okay, let's start with a gloss. Any thoughts on like what gloss means? Do you have any associations, or what do you think when you hear gloss? Yes. Anything else? Yeah, reflections from the surface, from the material. Yeah, you're right, actually. So several different definitions approach this from different perspectives. Like the standard terminology of appearance defines it as angular selectivity of reflectance, which reflects and produces some highlights or images of the environment that appears to be superimposed on the object. So like here, something that is superimposed, the image of the environment here, or like this one, the highlights that are produced. But it can be also like defined from the more appearance perspective and perceptual perspective, where they are perceived to be superimposed on the surface. But later in today's lecture, we will see that even though like the vast majority of the literature discusses gloss as a surface property, surface reflectance property, we'll see that translucency also affects gloss. And all these attributes do not exist in isolation and are not orthogonal, so they affect each other. Gloss affects translucency and the other way around, and color affects them, and so on. So we will see some of this today. Do you have any thoughts on what kind of dimensions or types or different kinds of gloss could be? For instance, for color, we have often like three different channels or dimensions, like hue, chromaticity, and lightness. So what could be something similar for gloss, like different types of gloss or different ways to describe the gloss properties?
I know that in gloss emitters, they go for different angles. So, for example, there is a spicular one, and there is the one that is like literally parallel to the surface, things like this. So it's kind of like represent the distribution of the reflectance in some specific angles, usually 60, if I remember, 45, and something like this. That is what I remember.
From optical perspective, yes, like for like measuring by device, but how would that then be the analog or like the parallel of that one in perception, like from the perceptual perspective?
Well,
sub-tens, and perhaps another dimension could just be like the intensity of the reflection, kind of like the brightness of the gloss and just how large it is on the object?
Yeah, they are the aspects that affect how glossy it is. So it's the kind of different cues or indications of gloss. But what I mean by dimensions or types of gloss is this, so we'll show, like, see more clear examples. So Hunter identified six different types of gloss. And as Mitra said, from the optical perspective, you can imagine it like in different ways, like specular gloss, the shininess of specular reflections, so how shiny the specular reflections appear, the sheen, which is the shininess at grazing angle. So if you have a look at your tables from low angle or at the floor, like when the angle is observation angle is very low or like nearly running the parallel of the surface, you see that it gets some like lighter contrast gloss, which is also like one way to quantify the gloss is the contrast between specular and non-specular areas, because you may have identical specular reflections, but for instance, black objects usually appear glossier than the white ones, because on the black ones you have larger contrast and these highlights stand out more. They are more visible than the exact same highlights on the white background. Absence of bloom gloss, so how sharp or opposite, how blurry or hazy the reflections look. You may have reflections that are very sharp and you may have blurred reflections. Distinctness of the reflected image gloss, so how clearly you can distinguish the environment like in the mirror. And absence of surface texture gloss, so when something is very glossy, you may notice that it just like saturated, shiny, with, and you are not able to see its texture very clearly. So here are the examples, like the specular gloss or the specular highlights and sheen, that is at the grazing angles, like low angles, that you see this shininess. So if you have a look at your tables, you will see it. Contrast gloss, that same highlights appear, evoke different magnitude of gloss perception, like white ones appear less glossy, and if we have the exactly same surface reflection, specular reflections here, it appears glossier. Absence of bloom, or like in more simple terms, like this haziness, so this appears less glossy than the one that has very sharp highlights. And how clearly you can see the reflected image, you can see it more clearly than here because of the bumpy surface and absence of texture. Like, for instance, in these areas, you see the texture, but because it's glossy, here you have this saturated areas due to highlights, so you don't see its texture that well anymore. And as you have already mentioned, it's mostly, in most cases, results from surface reflection or reflectance, and we may have the specular, perfectly one-to-one mirror-like reflections. We may have more like, produces this kind of mirror-like look with very clear distinctness of image and sharp highlights. We may have more blurred highlights because of this kind of reflection where the incident light gets redirected to some dominant direction, but still not there is no one-to-one match. And then we have more matte appearance where there is very little gloss because of Lambertian reflection, where the light, incident light can get reflected to any direction. And this happens because of surface, micro-level surface roughness that scatters rays, incident rays, to different directions.
Perfect diffuse. It's not 100%, but probably 99.9
And BRDF is often used to describe how the surface reflects light. So it has four variables or four dimensions of to characterize the amount of reflectance or portion of reflected light for each incident angle to each outgoing direction. When we take it like the angles relative to the surface normal. But BRDF is not, as I said, a very good friend of ours when we want to predict how this appears to humans. This is one of the most important works in gloss perception research done like more than 20 years ago already. So what they did was that they used multidimensional scaling to create the gloss space. They rendered the stimuli 27 images with different properties, like white, gray, and black ones with sharp, blurry, and more blurry highlights. And then they showed all combinations of pairs to observers and asked them to quantify the difference or distance in terms of gloss on the scale from 0 to 100. And then they ran the multidimensional scaling to see how these ones relate to one another in space. How many of you are familiar with multidimensional scaling? So in simplest term, MDS, it's like in short called MDS. In simplest terms, it's an optimization process where you have the distance between the point among the points, but you don't know how they are allocated in space or where they are in space. For instance, if you have the matrix and fill it with the distances between the American cities and then run two-dimensional MDS, it shows you how would be their optimal distribution in 2D space so that you have this all, you satisfy all these distances among all cities. So it's kind of optimization problem that you can have 2D or you can have in higher dimensions, 3 or more dimensions, but in the simplest terms, it goes from just distances among the points to placing them in a space in a way that makes sense and conforms to these distances that you have given as an input. Is this clear? So after they had the distance measured between all pairs of objects, then they ran MDS in 2D, and this is something they got. So this would be how the stimuli are placed in two dimensions. But then MDS output is just like two or more higher dimensional space. But it then up to you how you interpret that. So why are these ones placed closer? So usually considered more similar, while and this one and this one are farther away. So they found identified that there were two main dimensions or axes here. One is contrast that runs from white ones that have low contrast between highlights and other areas to high contrast where the highlights stand out more. And another dimension is distinctness, so how sharp the highlights are from more sharp on this direction to more blurry highlights. And then they modeled to create the space, they calculated how the gloss rating of each individual one relates to optical properties. For instance, the distinctness or sharpness of the highlights can be simply described by 1 minus roughness of the surface, while for contrast, it's more a cubic root and more complex interaction between diffuse reflectance and specular reflectance properties. So this is just one example how you can think of gloss as an appearance attribute and its gloss space where you, like in color space, you can navigate, for instance, move toward like lightness or change the hue or chroma or like some properties in more or less predictable and meaningful way, perceptually meaningful way. So the one of the objectives of the research is to have similar for gloss. So what, how to navigate in this property space to have meaningful and predictable changes in visual gloss. And how we perceive gloss, as I said, it is thought that we, instead of estimating the optical properties and running the reverse engineering to reconstruct how the light gets scattered by the material and so on, it is more likely that we rely on image statistics or some mathematical regularities in the images to deduce the material properties. So this is one very famous example where authors hypothesized that we may rely on the skewness of the luminance histogram to perceive gloss. So mean luminance of these two are the same, but this one has more skewed histogram than this one. So the skewness is like how tailed it is, so whether it has a clear tail or not. So where they say that, okay, when we have this tail toward the bright parts, so the most of the object is dark, but then we have a small group of the objects that appear lighter. This may be interpreted by our visual system, these brighter pixels, as a specular reflection. So it may help us think that this is glossy. But of course, it's not that simple, and we will see soon why. And yeah, then another image cues or statistics or properties that are thought to be indicators of gloss, as mentioned already today, like coverage or contrast or sharpness of the highlights. So how much of the object area is covered by specular reflections? Like here, almost entire object is covered by specular reflections, while here it's just small part. Contrast. Here, the contrast between these highlights and surrounding areas is high. And here, in this one, the contrast between specular highlights and surrounds are low. So this is, and then sharpness. These highlights appear sharper; they stand out more. While here, we have very blurry highlights that do not appear that sharp and do not stand out that much. And then in the end, this one looks glossier, a lot glossier than this one. So these are kind of image statistics or characteristics that may help us to understand that this one is glossy, rather than instead of estimating how the light gets reflected from this specific surface. But statistics are not the full story, and it's not that simple. Because, for instance, the stimulus should conform to some geometric constraints. Like, histogram does not capture the spatial information. Histogram beams just tell you, okay, how many pixels do you have, how many that are this bright, and how many do you have that have this much intensity. But the histogram does not tell you how they are allocated in space. So just a simple example. This one looks more glossy because the highlights are at the correct, physically correct space where they would fall naturally. While these ones are just like translated or moved to an arbitrary space in the image, and then it doesn't look glossy anymore. It looks like the artifact. But if you have the histogram of this one and this one, it will be identical because histogram just counts how many bright pixels we have, but it doesn't care where they are. So it means that when we interpret appearance, we will have a better example for translucency. We interpret the 3D shape as well in the same process. And this is another counterexample, that this one has a very skewed histogram but does not appear glossy at all. And also, it is important that we understand that it's a surface. For instance, here, the histogram of this would be very skewed because most of the pixels are dark black, and then we have a group of bright pixels. So it will have a skewed histogram, But here, this part is perceived glossy because we somehow understand that this is a water surface. Something tells us that this is a surface that reflects light. While if we have a look just this sky, even though it has statistics that are characteristic for glossy objects, we still don't say the sky is glossy. We understand that it's not a surface and it does not reflect light. Yeah, other factors that may impact how glossy or how matte the object or material appears can be color, object shape, because even if like you measure the BRDF at the point and the material, specific material, has specific reflectance, if you make different objects of different shapes, it will appear differently, and the glossiness, perceived glossiness of them will be different. Illumination is important. Motion helps us to see the glossiness because if it, so it's oftentimes an ill-posed problem to really understand what is the reflectance from the surface, like what is specular reflectance and what is the kind of texture of the surface. And the motion helps us to disambiguate because if I rotate the object, for instance, the surface texture, if it's painted on top of it, will rotate with the object, while the specular reflections will remain more or less stationary and static to me. Or I may move my head and see whether the highlights move and so on. And later I will show you why translucency affects gloss, even though its gloss is thought to be surface reflectance property only. Any questions so far before we start translucency part? So far, so good. Okay, then we can have a break. Let's say 13 minutes past 11 or like 14 minutes. So just to start at 15:45, be back like 1 minute early, and we can continue. So what courses do you have in this semester?
This one, cross-media color production.
Cross-media with Phil?
Yeah.
Computer graphics.
Introduction to color graphics.
And
computer graphics.
Okay. Just four?
Just four.
Who is teaching image processing?
Ali,
okay. So you may have then some quality elements there, or not really.
For now we have denoising.
Okay. Segmentation and these kind of things.
Yeah, segmentation was basically based on the histogram.
Coursework project on translucency perception, and he suggested me to talk to you, maybe narrow it down a bit because like it's a very wide field. So, do you have like, if you have time now, we can talk about it, or
yeah.
Not later, maybe.
Yeah, we can do now. So in this course?
Yeah, yeah. In this course we have to have a course part, which is you have to write a review.
For translucency, actually, I've made the review on translucency.
Actually, I was checking, and there was your article.
I published it a year ago. But what would be very extremely valuable would be to do a similar review on transparency perception.
Transparency. Okay.
That will be very interesting and very valuable. Yeah.
Okay. So is there some sort of a group or a person who's specifically working that I could start with? Then go from the person's article to other articles that are mentioned, because
Yeah, I can send you a few names.
That will be great.
A bit
that will
old,
be great.
Like Metelli, who started that, and two relatively recent papers.
Okay. That would be great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So just send me an email if you decide on that project, and I will help you.
I wanted to go through appearance, and then your talk on the cozy day actually was the spark for me. I was like, okay, this is what I want to work on. And then I went searching, and there was your article, and I was like, okay, so there's already an article about it. So there's not much to do, especially that it's very new, like more last year.
Yeah.
But if you think that there is this cavity in transparency's perception, then why not?
Yeah, then that will be very valuable.
Okay.
So if you do really good, have a really comprehensive review, it may be even published.
Okay. Fingers crossed. Okay, I will send you the email.
Okay,
Thank you.
Sure.
I have actually been able to answer this. So I rendered a marble in Blender, and I thought the shadow looked kind of not exactly what I expected. I kind of, since I have the outside, I have a layer of purple noise, so I expected some purple color in the shadowing.
That's interesting. So is that purple intentional or?
Yeah, it's intentional. It's created some noise that is only on the surface, but I expected it to also be reflected in the shadow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you have some purple here, so maybe it gets focused in this area, but doesn't really go through the object, because there is another surface. When the light exits from inside the material to the outside.
Yeah.
So maybe that purple gets reflected scattered near the surface rather than going through it and being projected on the surface.
Yeah.
That could be one reason.
Wouldn't I also expect some light emission from the bottom then?
Here?
Yeah, because it's been refracted out of the marble.
It depends on the illumination direction, because if the light going from this side, it will probably cover it. So to have some light on these areas, it should be scattering very much, or some light coming from this side to go through toward this. Maybe, but you can play with different options and see. That's, I think, the trial and error easiest way to understand. Or you can make this even more purple, the whole object, and then you'll start seeing that.
Yeah, thanks.
And you can move the light source a bit and see how it affects, because illumination direction is also important.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the render was wrong or if my expectations were wrong.
it can be both, but... Yeah, it's extremely difficult to have very clear expectations, because oftentimes physics is so complex that it's counterintuitive in the end.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah.
They're even farther.
All of them are going in the same room.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, let's continue with translucency then. Is it recording, Peter? Hello, yeah, we're starting the second part now.
A little bit delayed, but okay.
Nice. Yeah, what does translucency say to you? So how would you define it?
How much light passes through the object.
Yeah. Passing, like transmission of light, anything more specific?
I wouldn't say like how much light would pass through. I would say how much detail can I get from the depth of a one object. Is like then that would be the difference between translucency and transparency somehow?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So how like clearly you can see, or how blurry the image appears that goes like through the material. So yeah, actually in this case you also got it very accurate. So the definitions of translucency mention points such as transmitting light diffusely, so there is some degree of scattering of light, and also it's between extremes of complete transparency and complete opacity, and usually you have some a blurred image, but not necessarily the image just as a background, but some like light distribution and pattern that you see through the object or on the object that the light goes through and penetrates it. It's still not very clear how, later I will present my recent work on this, how translucency relates to transparency and opacity. So for instance, what does more translucent mean? Is it closer to transparency or closer to opacity, more scattering? So what does saying that the one thing is more translucent than the other mean? So it depends where you stand and what do you compare, because our hypothesis is that we start from transparency where like it's light going through directly, almost perfectly, and when you increase scattering, it becomes gradually more and more and more translucent. So if you compare something like water and milk, milk is more translucent than water because water is more transparent and does not scatter light that much. But then at some point it reaches hypothetical peak, and then if the scattering is too much, then no light is going through, and in the end it becomes more and more opaque. For instance, milk is more translucent, on the other hand, than metals or something for instance, aluminum or wood. This creates a problems for psychophysical experiments, because we need to define it properly to make sure that the observers are doing the right task. But if we don't really understand the perception, how can we define it this precisely? So it kind of creates chicken and egg type of a problem. And translucency implies subsurface transport of light. So unlike BRDF that just describes what happens at the surface, here BSSRDF is used to characterize the subsurface light transform. We have the light that enters the material, gets scattered inside, maybe absorbed a bit, and then exits from another point. And then there are different things that matter in this case. Index of refraction at the surface, and absorption and scattering inside the material, and scattering phase function, which characterizes to which directions the light gets scattered after scattering event. So for transparency is relatively better understood, not fully, but how we perceive transparency mostly really depends on the relationship between the intensities at so-called X junctions or the boundaries between the object seen like the transparent object and then the background seen through this object and background seen through the plane view. Like, for instance, here, tell me which bars appear transparent to you. So here, which one is transparent? Which one? Black. Yeah, it's bistable. You can see the both, either white one or the black one on top, but you see that there is some transparency. So, but there is not enough information to really understand which one is on top. What about these two? So here only the diagonal one looks transparent, and here none of them. So how the light intensities at these boundaries relate to each other define whether they appear transparent or not. Like here, the relation between this intensity, this, and this, and like between these ones and this one. So if it's like S-shaped, it is bistable, so any of them can appear on top because the thing that is in the middle can be the any combination of like black and white. While here, doesn't appear transparent at all because by adding a lighter shade of gray to black does not produce even lighter shade when these ones are overlaid. So we don't encounter that in real life a lot. So you may have with polarization create that effect intentionally, but that's not what happens in real life like on daily basis. And here, because this is plain black, this C-shaped relation at the X junctions makes it more unambiguous perception of transparency that this is lighter gray, this is fully black, and this appears darker gray because this one is on top and these two meet. Are get mixed. So this relation between the colors and distributions by like what is seen through the object and what is seen in the plane view define how transparent or whether we perceive objects transparent or opaque. But for translucent objects that are very highly translucent, such as human skin or marble or wax, for example, you don't see any of the background and you don't see anything through the object, exactly the image to compare these edges, then how do we understand that they are translucent?
Just a comment in the middle on, if you would add some shadows on these two stripes, then probably the entire setting would look different.
Yes, that will help. That will help
because
to...
Because then you might think that they are not attached to each other. There might be, you know, a space in between, and then the light is a kind of entering. There's some other reflection.
This one has different properties than this one, you mean, and this is... Yes, actually additional cues may help. If there are more cues that indicate that this is one bar on top of this one, it may help, but it's still we will probably start understanding that this part of the bar and this part of the bar are made of different materials, because if it's this dark, it wouldn't produce this color when overlaid on the black.
No, that was just a thought. That's why with the shadow, you have some additional information to
Yeah, exactly. So more cues help us to understand, as I said, shape and arrangement in the space, like special arrangement in the scene. But yeah, that's a good point. Okay, for translucency, for instance, one very strong cues and indicators are edges. For instance, this is a fully opaque Lambertian cube, and this is exactly the same shape which is made of the translucent materials, and if we find the unsigned difference in intensities, we will see that this is mostly near the edges, because here the light that hits from this side doesn't go through, while here the light can go through and exit on these like shallow areas. So the edges of translucent objects are usually very indicative, like informative, whether the material is translucent or not. And thin parts in general, because in thin parts, it's more likely for the light to go through. So even if material is transmissive, if it's like thick enough, in the end it will become opaque. And these thin parts help us to see the light transmission. Illumination direction has a huge impact on translucency appearance, and objects lit from behind usually appear more translucent than the ones lit from the front, because what you see from the front is mostly just reflections, while when it's lit from the backside, you see how light goes through the material. So the backlit condition, it makes it appear more translucent. So this is the same material, but it looks very different in the front lid and back lid. And motion also helps us to, if we move the object and see that how background change affects the appearance of the object and how much it impacts, this may help us to see the translucency. And also in this case, we start from the backlit condition and move it to the front lid condition. So this is exactly the same object, same properties. It just in this rendering, I'm just rotating the environment map, and the appearance of this object changes dramatically. So just have a look. So this is the same object, but it changes its appearance so much based on the illumination direction. Scale is very important because, yeah, as I mentioned, it's not the material property as a, like just measured for some specific sample that matters, but like the overall object and its shape and scale, how much light manages to go through it. Because when we make it thicker and thicker, less and less light manages to go through. And the other way around, when you make it thinner, it reaches, it gets closer to transparency. For instance, so to understand the scale, it's the same background, so this the size of the background texture is to imagine the scale differences between this one and this one. So this is 20 times smaller than this one, and it's exactly the same material, but you see how its appearance changes when we make it smaller. And this is very relevant and big issue in 3D printing. When you have one specific object and you want to print it in different sizes, how should you adjust the material mixing ratios or recipe to match the appearance? Because if you print small object and large object with the same material and same settings, they will look very different. And yeah, the same thing as for gloss, we also have some image statistic things for translucency. And the same author, Motoyoshi, claimed that if we blur the non-specular parts, so decrease the contrast between specular and non-specular areas, it will start looking more translucent. And the reason it is because we are removing the shadows in convex and near the convex and concave areas. So like here, we see these shadows, and this tells us, this high contrast between the shadowed areas and the bright parts tells us that These should be opaque because we have the shadows because light doesn't reach inside. While it's so, this is exactly the same shape, but translucent material, we don't have that shadows and we don't have that clear contrast as is this the case here. So because we then start understanding that because there is little contrast, light should be entering the material and reaching all the areas, so it looks more or less like less, we have less distribution of bright and dark parts, and it's more like homogeneous. This is another example. So these two, so this is the same material, and these two, like the vertically, are the same materials. But when they are shown in the spherical shape, they look nearly the same because both of them are highly scattering, and the sphere is thick and compact, and no light goes through, so they look nearly equally opaque. While when we add these tiny bumps, that helps us understand that these shadows here indicate that this material is opaque, and the lack of shadows here indicate that this should be translucent. Yeah, this is an example from 3D printing. So if you make this object in the same material, this small, so just compare the size of the background blobs, it will appear very different. And then the objective of the research is to match, to change the material so that when shown in this scale, the appearance matches this one. So that's one nice example. And yeah, another example on why motion matters, because motion helps us to really understand what comes from the front side or the reflections of the from the surface and what comes through the object, which image structure. There are some cues even in the static images, but when we add motion, it becomes a lot more clear. So if I tell you which one is a reflective metallic mirror and which one is glass, transparent glass, because for the computer, it's just like very similar distribution of colors and intensities. But we somehow still understand that maybe the top row is more metallic mirror and the bottom row is more like transparent glass. And then the motion helps us a lot to distinguish the two. So why? Any thoughts? What is different in motion? Can run it one more time. So if we have a look at the optical flow, so the reddish pixels mean that in that place, the pixel intensity motion is in the direction of rotation of the sphere, and the blue means it's opposite of the object rotation. So in case of mirror, the reflections move together with the rotation around the axis, while when it's transparent, we have contribution from the background that rotates in the opposite direction. So when the sphere moves like this, the backside moves in the opposite direction than the front. And we get that contribution when it's transparent. So, and then you see that how the light intensities change does not really follow how it rotates. So I will show this again to have another look. So here a lot of parts appear to be moving opposite, in the opposite direction. So motion helps us to disambiguate these kind of things. And this is also my one favorite demonstrations. So these guys claim that we don't perceive translucency in isolation, but we perceive translucency in the same process as we perceive the 3D shape, because perception of translucency depends on the interpretation of the shape. And if the intensities appear to be correlated with the shape, like surface normal distribution, for instance, it appears opaque, and then if the intensities, if they are more like appear to be random, in relation with the shape, then it appears more translucent. So here, I will run the video, and the intensities, the brightness or the lightness of the pixels is the same, but they manipulate the shape, perceived shape, by changing this grid, the texture, so that you see different shapes. But the intensities remain the same, and based on what shape you perceive, it appears translucent or opaque. So here is it. So this appears more translucent, and this appears more opaque, because then the highlights match where they would fall if it's opaque.
The second one looks like the 2D shape put in the 3D scene, but the first one is like really 3D.
Yeah, this is more like a ribbon, and the first one is a snake. Here is another example. Opaque and translucent. Yeah. So if we perceive it like a cone, then it's naturally to be opaque, and then the highlights would be on this side. But if then the grid changes appearance to the shape to donut or torus, then the highlights would be in the center only if it's transmitted through the object and it's translucent. Yeah, that's very briefly about translucency perception. So what are the open questions and interesting topics that are still not very clear? So one is the concept of translucency constancy. Like you had a crash course on color with Peter, right? They had it.
Yeah.
And you should be familiar with color constancy. And the question is...
No. There was no time to talk about the visual elements. I have not covered color constancy yet.
Does anyone know what color constancy means? Illumination, exactly. So to see, for instance, here, the same cup, if you look these images separately, would still appear white under different illuminations. But with some, and but if you have a look at the patch, like cropped from here, you see that it's very different. This is more yellowish, this is more greenish, but we somehow discard the effect of illumination. And then the question is, can we do the same for translucency? So our translucency constancy seems to be weaker than color constancy, and changing the illumination direction has a very big impact on how translucent it appears. But it may be still like when we don't have that dramatic changes under diffuse illumination, it may be to some extent still the case to see objects consistently translucent. And the question is, what are the limits of this? Because color constancy is not perfect either, so it fails in some cases. Yeah, about conceptual points, so exactly how does it relate with transparency and opacity, and how should we define or quantify perceptual translucency so that it's not ambiguous for human observers? Because I have faced a lot of times that observers don't exactly understand what we mean, something to be translucent. And the relation among appearance attributes, how different attributes impact each other, like how gloss impacts color, texture, and translucency, how translucency impacts the other three, and so on. So there is still a lot of unknowns here, how they interact with each other. And now I will present a few examples of my work at the Color Lab on translucency, gloss, and appearance in general. So when I was starting my PhD, because that field is also in its infancy, I didn't know where to start from and what hypothesis to pursue. So we decided to do this social kind of experiment that we gave human observers physical objects and asked them to do some tasks and play with that, interact freely as they would do in real life. And we videotaped the whole process. So some of you, I think, remember this from my Cozy Days presentation. We videotaped the whole process to understand how humans behave and maybe draw some relevant hypotheses, how we behave and how we interpret the appearance in like these unrestricted and unconstrained conditions, because oftentimes psychophysical experiments are conducted in very limited conditions in the lab, on the display, maybe using some chin rest. You can't move your head, you can't touch the stimuli, and so on. And we got some interesting findings. For instance, you remember that illumination direction matters for translucency, and when I was, or like observers in general, asked to assess translucency, they picked up the object and looked to the sun or the light source and looked through the object, putting in the backlit condition to see the transmission, that the shape matters, and the objects made from the same material shown in different shapes appear differently and are considered to be different, or in some cases observers understand, for instance, when it, like here, they understand that the whole object is made from the same material, but we still see that this appears very different than the body because of the thickness. Another interesting question is to have the appearance ordering system. So just give them a bunch of objects and, okay, arrange them in a way, cluster or arrange. So first it was clustering. Cluster them in a way that makes sense to you was the task. And most of them clustered them by color. So color is the strongest attribute to differentiate between the objects. So it's easier to like distinguish and spot immediately what's happening here than here. So here we have by translucency or light transmission. Transparent ones are together, translucent ones are together, and opaque ones are together. But here it's, you understand immediately what's happening, white, orange, and blue. So they grouped mostly by color. And then we asked them to arrange the objects in space, and that was very complicated. And so we gave them objects like first like five objects and then adding objects one by one. And every time we introduced a new object, that increased the complexity, and in the end they felt very lost, because initially we gave like five yellowish spheres that were more or less translucent, transparent, and then they ranked them in one dimension from translucency. But then when we added, for instance, bluish one, then they had to add color. And when we gave them the one with very smooth surface, they had to add the glossiness dimension. And then we gave them this bust figure, and then the shape was also somehow to accommodate. And in the end, it was very difficult to really have the space that fully conveys this entire appearance, because there are so many dimensions and so many aspects. So this is still an open question. How can we organize or arrange the appearance? Like for color, we have again like these different dimensions, hue, angle, or chromaticity, lightness. But for appearance, we are struggling to describe them with like meaningfully low dimensions. So if you have 100 dimensions, yeah, but that's not really intelligible for humans. So we need 2, 3, maybe maximum 4 dimensions to make it practical for human use. Here we demonstrated that the translucency or opacity depends on the illumination intensity. So when we have a very strong, high luminance backlight, this, so initially the lamp was off, and in the diffuse illumination, observers considered these textiles to be opaque. But when we introduced this very bright, shiny lamp, they started to understand, oh, this transmits some light, so it should be translucent, not opaque. So the light source matters. And in this one, this was for 3D printing applications to understand how we perceive the translucency differences and whether the shape matters. So do you remember that the bumpy spheres and like perfect spheres, when they're shown in perfect spheres, material difference in material is not easily detected because they look all opaque. But if you add the thin parts to the same pair of different materials, you immediately spot the difference between the two. So here we investigated how shape affects the difference in translucency. For color difference, we have some parametric factors, for instance, patch size and this kind of thing. So probably if we come up ever with translucency difference formula, like delta translucency, then it should accommodate for shape information as well. This is from the image quality point of view, whether translucency depends on image quality. So if we blur the image too much, we remove these statistical regularities, and then it appears more and more homogeneous, opaque to human observers. And in this one, I photographed the physical objects with different colors and different degrees of gloss. Like this is very glossy, very smooth. This is somewhat glossy, and this is very matte and rough. And analyze the image statistics. And yeah, if you have a look at this, like very specific examples in controlled conditions, yeah, they conform to this skewness of the histogram rule. That okay, here it's logical that this highlights produce the skew in the histogram, and here we don't have that skew. And also, like when we have the white object, these highlights produce less skew, so the tail is less visible and closer to the rest of the pixel intensities, while here the tail stands out a lot from the rest. So then that may be correlated with the fact that, okay, this one appears glossier than this one because here we have better contrast and highlights. So like here, like the distance, we have better contrast and the highlights stand out more on this one. And also this appears glossier than these two because we have more skewed histogram. But in the end, is it exactly the way our visual system... So you may catch these kind of correlations, but is it exactly the way our visual system functions? Probably not, because, for instance, here, so this is also a matte object, but with less scratches and artifacts, and we overlaid the specular highlights on top of it, and this one is, you may get tricked at least for some seconds that this may look glossy. While here, because of these scratches, even though these highlights produce that skew in the histogram, if you have a look at the histogram without special information and everything, you will see that, okay, these highlights stand out and maybe look something like this. But this looks more glossy, while these scratches tell us that, okay, this is impossible to be glossy with this scratch surface, so it's more likely to be some artifacts here. And also, oftentimes, when the material is very flat, we don't have that distribution of, like, here, surface curvature gives us these highlights and other areas. But when it's flat, oftentimes, the whole intensity can be just narrowed down to a single value. Like, we understand that this should be a metallic glossy one, but under this condition, it's just homogeneous gray. And if we tilt the angle very slightly, it starts to appear very, very shiny. But it's the distribution of bright and dark is not very clear here. And yeah, this is what I wanted to discuss, glossiness beyond surface reflectance. So what else matters? We had these five spherical objects in the experiment that have exactly identical surface, and what so reflectance from the surface is nearly identical. What matters is what happens inside the object. So some of them are transparent, and some of them are absorbing from inside. And then we asked observers to rank these ones by glossiness. And initially, when we analyzed the aggregate data, we did not find any statistically significant difference. But then we noticed that there were two different approaches and two different groups of people. So some of them said that opaque ones are glossier because they can use it as a mirror and see themselves when they look at it. So they appeared to have more emphasis on the contrast gloss, while others said that the translucent ones are glossier because there is more light going through, so the highlights are shinier and they are brighter in general. So we had this dichotomy. Then we did the same with the complex shape, and in this case, translucent ones were more consistently ranked glossier than the opaque ones because the complex shape removes that distinctness of image, so you can't use it as a mirror anymore. So even if you have a clear contrast here, unlike this sphere, you don't see yourself reflected because it has very complex surface. And yeah, this is a statistic. So we had in the second experiment here 107 observers, and most of them ranked translucent ones more glossier than opaque ones, but of course there were some other cases. And then the question is, while most of the papers on gloss perception just address opaque stimuli, fully opaque stimuli, and just talk about reflections, should we somehow incorporate translucency as a factor in the gloss perception models? So, like here, oftentimes, especially in RGB images, it's not easy to really understand what highlights come from the surface reflection and what comes from the transmission. Like if you take a crystal vase, it looks very shiny, very glossy, but are you sure that it's just reflectance from the surface, or it's some light that's scattered inside and going through that causes this shininess and highlights? And especially in images where the dynamic range is limited, we often can't distinguish that. So we then investigated this question in graphics, and the thing is the same. So the surface, what gets reflected from the surface, it's exactly identical, but what is different is what happens to the light that gets inside the material. So this scatters most of the light and scatters it back, and this one absorbs most of the light. So in the end, because of the light that gets scattered backward, the contrast between highlights and the rest is less, and the highlights do not stand out that much. While here, because most of the light gets absorbed inside, the highlights are very clearly visible on the surface. And then the observers, most of them said, okay, this is glossier than this one, and then these ones are glossier than this one. And actually, when you don't have that highlight or mirror-like reflections, it was when the objects were very rough, it was opposite. In this case, you don't have any gloss cues, really, so all of them look very matte. But when you really force the observers to compare them by glossiness, then they go with overall lightness. Okay, this seems to be reflecting more light, so it should be glossier than this one. And the same was true for complex shape here, because you can't use it as a mirror and you don't see clear reflection of the environment. Highly scattering materials produce more highlights, and highly absorbing materials produce less highlights, so this one was usually considered glossier than this. And another important and interesting thing is that even simple perturbations in shape affect glossiness as well as translucency a lot. For instance, this is exactly the same material, but these little bumps make the glossy appearance very different. Like this is very glossy like a mirror, and these bumps do not let us, we see it's highly reflective, but we don't see like a mirror reflection of the environment. And same here, this is the same transparent material, and when it's simple sphere, it's very transparent, you can look through it, see the background, while here these bumps do not let us to see through, and it looks more translucent. And the final point, how transparency relates with translucency. So do you remember this hypothesis that we have this kind of bell-shaped relation? So I conducted this experiment with Tosin. So he's also, he was a COSY student who graduated this year. Maybe you have met him. And we asked observers to scale transparency opacity, and then in another experiment to scale translucency of the objects. And then we plotted one as a function of another for these two different shapes. And this is what we got. So for sphere, this mostly follows the hypothesized bell-shaped curve, the Gaussian function. For sphere, it is usually low, so when it's closer to transparency, it's low translucency. When it's somewhere in the middle between transparency and opacity, it is highly translucent. And when it's highly opaque, it is low translucent again. While for Lucy, that has complex shape, we don't have that clear bell shape anymore. And like throughout the whole spectrum of transparency opacity, we still have more or less average translucency, because it never appears fully opaque because it has thin parts and appears somewhat translucent, but it never appears fully transparent either because of complex shape. We can't see through it very clearly. So this means that the shape has a huge impact not only about individual attributes, for instance, just translucency itself, but also how these attributes interact with each other, vary among the shapes. So here is some recommended reading if you're interested to learn more on this. Some more like technical overviews, a paper summarizing some of the Color Lab research, my work on my thesis and review paper on translucency, and this is one of the most influential papers on translucency that is getting old, but still it's a good introduction. Impact of light direction of translucency, two review papers on gloss. This one is more from metrological point of view, while this one is from neuroscience people. And this is the paper about modeling and creating gloss space, the computer graphics perspective on modeling appearance. And this is about the arts and appearance. So you can have a look at these papers if you want to learn more. And the last point, if you are interested in a coursework project to do the literature, it's a literature review, right, Peter, on something like this, feel free to send me an email. Unfortunately, I will be physically away till the end of November, but I will be always available online for discussions. We can have Zoom or Teams meetings anytime. So even though I'm not physically here, I will be happy to support and supervise if you decide to work on something like this. And you can send me email anytime. So I will upload these slides to, I will send it to Peter to upload the Blackboard. Yeah, thank you very much. We have 3-4 minutes for questions if you have any.
I do have a question.
Yes.
Now, we talked about, or people talked for centuries about color and their understanding and color matching function, which is needed, information about the reflectance from an object and the light source, which then ends up with the stimuli, and then we can calculate the color dimension, as you said, like brightness and hue and chroma. In terms of gloss, you also mentioned the kind of classification into contrast and distinctness. Very interesting. Maybe I missed the point. What about translucency? Did you also try a kind of to distinguish between a kind of different dimensions?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Do I have it here? Yeah, that's exactly one of the open questions.
That is just the beginning of my question. The actual question is actually, we talk about the color difference. That is very well defined and kind of excellent understood. But when it comes to appearance difference, wasn't it a kind of a desire then to be able to get a kind of a measurement and to get one number which then tells us the difference in terms of appearance between two objects? And then still we could find out, okay, and so much did the color contribute to difference, so much the translucency, so much the texture, and so much the gloss in a weighted function. Wouldn't that be a kind of the absolute desire?
Yeah, exactly. So that would be the paramount goal.
Okay.
To, I don't know whether it's any time within our reach in the nearest future, but yeah, that would be that would solve all these industrial problems, how to quantify the difference and how to what to change to match the difference, because then you would say, okay, this doesn't appear like this one because you have this much gloss and this much translucency. But yeah, it's very complicated. Even like for to get back to the first part of your questions, like for translucency, we don't even know what perceptual dimensions are. Can one number fully express the difference in translucency, or should we have several different aspects compared with each other? What makes that even more complicated is that these ones are not orthogonal, so we can't have just a simple weighted sum of color difference, translucency difference, but then color amount of color difference affects translucency difference and the other way around, and then all these interactions will lead to a super complex model probably.
Nevertheless, you see there is still an open end for research. So, first of all, many thanks for
my pleasure.
Exciting lecture. Excellent pedagogical slides and also a lot of references, even highlighted what kind of references they belong to. So, it's an excellent field to do some more exploration. So for those who have not made up their mind yet on what they want to spend more time on reviewing some previous work, so that's an excellent opportunity. Okay, thank you again.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Meet quarter past one. Yes.
Sure, but then also the idea is what do you want? What is the goal that you want to achieve with the literature review? So what is the point you want to make? That you need to think. So it's not.
That's the problem. I don't understand what I'm doing. What do you mean by the outcome? What do I need to
so first of all, what is very important, you need to have a very clear understanding what scientific literature is about.
Yes.
That is the very first.
Yes.
So you need to know this is the hammer, this is the saw.
Yes.
And if you don't know that, then it's difficult to go ahead. So you need to know what this is about. And then based on that, if you then have a certain topic, where you're gonna understand, elaborate, what has this author done? What has this author done in that field? And this author, and perhaps what is this algorithm? And what is this algorithm? What do they have in common? What is the difference between these two? And that is what the discussion is about. So it's not only to make a table and then say author A has done this, author B has done this, author C has done this. So that needs to be in interaction with each other. So what are the pros and cons? What are the differences? What do they have in common? And then finally, what is missing? And that is your contribution, a kind of, okay.
That's the missing part I have to figure it out.
For instance. So that is kind of what you have to come up with. So what is missing in this entire picture that you won't find in the literature, that is your own findings.
That's what I wanted to ask. And the other thing is, what I wanted to ask, I forgot. I was just going to ask you something. I forgot.
We are back in a minute.
Okay. Yeah.
So
when I remember,
we can carry on.
Yeah.
But make sure that you